So before we start most meetings here at the Fellowship, we begin by lighting a chalice and sharing a little period of quiet and centering before we get started on the agenda. As we acknowledge that being in relationship with one another is one of the most important parts of our involvement in our faith community. So we begin our meetings by checking in with one another. We go around and each person has a minute or two to share a little bit about what's been going on in their life. As a prompt, I often ask people to reflect on the question, how is it with your heart? In response, people reflect on the state of their lives, their relationships, the challenges they're facing, and their joys. It's a beautiful practice, and it helps us not only get to know one another more deeply, meeting by meeting, but it helps us to have compassion for those in the group who may be having a tough time. By far, the most common word I hear during these times of checking in is busy. Most people, even retired people, are very busy. Many of us are actively engaged with one thing or another from the time we wake up until the time we fall asleep. I was originally going to say from the time we get out of bed in the morning until the time that we crawl back in bed at night, but I know that many of us, myself included, pick up our phones and are reading the news and browsing email and sending texts before our feet hit the floor in the morning and right up until we drift off at night. We are busy. Busy is the norm. It is a deeply ingrained part of our contemporary culture. And having a lot to do is more than accepted and expected by our society. It is often worn as a badge of honor, isn't it? In these meetings, we all nod along sympathetically and approvingly when, person by person, we each list all the many things that are occupying our time and attention. Sometimes somebody shares their sense of busyness with a sense of joy and excitement, but more often, it is shared with a tone of complaint, with a breath or a breathless sense of overwhelm. I hear the anxiety in people's voices and also sometimes a tinge of sadness. I'm really starting to get that most of us do not have enough time to rest, to relax, to enjoy the simple pleasures of being alive. We are human beings who have normalized being human doings. We judge ourselves and one another by what we do, what we accomplish, what we produce. In this constant state of overstimulation, we have lost touch with our essential spiritual nature. We've become lost to our higher selves, and we are suffering individually and collectively because of that. A growing number of Americans, many of us sitting right here this morning, are struggling with anxiety and depression and addiction and overwhelm. It can be different than this. It has been different than this. Life was much slower in much of human history. We're running at an unprecedented pace that seems to only be increasing. The speed of information facilitated by our fabulous technology is shrinking the globe and making it possible for us to know what is happening in every corner of the world at any instant. This constant stimulation is too much for our minds to comprehend, and it is far too much for our hearts to hold. I do not believe that this rush and roar of life that Rabindranath Tagore refers to is how life was intended for us. Looking around at all of the other beings with whom we share life on this planet, it becomes so clear that this is not how any other life form exists. Listen to Mary Oliver's words again. The trees stir in their leaves and call out, "Stay a while." The light flows from their branches and they call again. "It's simple," they say. "And you too have come into the world to do this, to go easy, to be filled with light, and to shine." This is why I wanted to talk about the Sabbath today. I think as we have become a more secular society, we've lost a valuable practice, a practice that has been endorsed by most of the world's major religions. The word Sabbath shares a common root in Latin, Greek, and Hebrew that all means day of rest. The Buddha taught that the Epasatha day is for the cleansing of the defiled mind, resulting in inner calm and joy. Depending upon the tradition and the culture, it is observed generally about once a week in accordance with the four lunar phases, the full moon and the new moon and the two quarter moons in between. The Torah portrays the Sabbath concept both in terms of resting on the seventh day, but allowing the land to lay fallow during each seventh year. According to Genesis, the Sabbath is the time to cease our creating so that we may appreciate what God has done in the world and is doing in us. Now, this is also the root for the word sabbatical, a practice that I am so grateful that Unitarian Universalist congregations support for their professional religious leaders. The board and I are already beginning to think about my upcoming sabbatical, my period of rest, or a time to lay fallow in a few years. In contemporary Judaism, Shabbat is a day of being and not doing. The rest of the week, Jews are exhorted to improve the world and better themselves, but on this day, just be. Serve God not in changing the world, but in relaxing into what is already there. Many Muslims take a half day to rest following the call to prayer on Friday. The Quran states, when the call is proclaimed to prayer on Friday, hasten earnestly to the remembrance of Allah and leave off business. The Catholic Church teaches that the Lord's Day should be a day of grace and rest from work to cultivate their familial, cultural, social, and religious lives. So the reasoning behind all of these religious exhortations to take a day of rest is to help us keep our priorities straight. It would be so easy in our quest to stay busy and to lead fruitful lives to begin to think that our work, our productivity, is the ultimate priority. The Sabbath day invites us to remember what is truly of most worth. Without a regular practice, we lose track of what we actually, in our own heart of hearts, believe is of most importance. So remember the reading, those of you who were here last Sunday, from Ralph Waldo Emerson that said, a person will worship something, have no doubt of that. That which dominates our imaginations and our thoughts will determine our lives and character. Therefore, it behooves us to be careful what we worship, for what we are worshiping, we are becoming. So first, let me break down the word worship for you, because I think this is important, and I think we get stopped sometimes by some of these traditional religious words. Worship comes from the Old English root, worth-ship. It refers to that which is deemed to be of most worth, most worthy. So worship is the celebration and praise and reverence for what we determine to be of most worth. So Emerson's words ring true. Whatever dominates our thoughts, whatever it is that we turn over in our minds, what we wake in the night thinking about, what we think about over and over again throughout the day, day after day, these thoughts are what we believe are of most worth. And whatever we believe is of most worth begins to take over our thinking. If what occupies our thoughts the most is our work, our ability to accomplish tasks, our achievements, our accumulation of money and material goods, these will be raised up and placed upon the highest altar in our minds, and we will kneel before them. But I'm preaching to the choir a little bit here, right? Because you are here this morning for your weekly reminder of what you believe is actually worthy of your worship. Coming here on Sunday mornings, and maybe you also come to one of our weekly meditation groups, is like a mini Sabbath. It's an hour for us to practice being fully present, reorienting ourselves to the truth, to strengthen our relationship with the Spirit, our connection to our own higher selves, or for those of you for whom the word resonates with God. Together, we remind ourselves that the spirit of love itself is really the only thing worthy of our worship. When we come together and use this time to rest and rejuvenate and recalibrate our navigation system, we are more likely to live our lives the other 6 days of the week peacefully and with compassion for ourselves and for others. But today, I am suggesting that you dedicate more than just this 1 hour each week to your spiritual care practice. It is a radical act to reclaim time from your busy schedule each week or sometime each day to rest, to refrain from media and commerce, and just be. Nurture your soul, your relationships, your body temple. This is time to spend outside of time, just being present in the moment and letting go of the past and future concerns. One of my teachers always said, you should meditate for at least 30 minutes every morning, unless, of course, you have a very busy day, in which case you should meditate for an hour. I'm curious, how many of you have a regular, perhaps daily, meditation practice? That's good. That's great. It seems counterintuitive, but I promise if you take some extra time on even your busiest days to sit quietly, to still your mind, to focus on your breathing, on simply being instead of doing, and allow your mind to come to rest, even for 10 minutes, you will be in a much better shape to handle the rest of your day. There are so many resources to help you get started. I have a wonderful app that I'm using on my phone. Let me know if you need some help getting started. As you practice allowing your mind to grow quiet and calm, you will begin to notice all the ways that the ego identifies with busyness and overwhelm. You'll begin to be able to recognize the voice of judgment that tells you that if you do not produce results or perform well, you are worthless as a human being. It is a terribly mean voice in our heads, isn't it? And it speaks with our own voice. But when you claim regular time for your spiritual care, you begin to learn to quiet that voice. It doesn't go away, never goes away, but you learn to quiet it. And you'll be able to question those habits of thought that we get into that chip away at your feeling of well-being and would make you feel totally unworthy of love. In his book, The Power of Now, Eckhart Tolle writes, "The whole essence of Zen consists in walking along that razor's edge of the now, to be so utterly, so completely present that no problem, no suffering, nothing that is not who you are in your essence can survive in you. In the now, in the absence of time, all your problems dissolve. Suffering needs time. It cannot survive in the now." See, your peacefulness, your sense of spiritual well-being is important to me as your minister. I want to be helpful to you as you create your most peaceful, most joyful, most meaningful, and purposeful life that you possibly can. That's the direction of health. It is the path to joy and a peaceful life. And it's an important step on the path of spiritual enlightenment. You each have, within your own power, the ability to choose how you spend your time and where you put your attention. It's the most powerful thing you have, and it is within your power. From her poem, The Summer Day, Mary Oliver wrote, "I don't know exactly what prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, had a stroll through the fields, which is what I've been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? So I leave you this morning with some questions for you to ponder. How is it with your heart? If you're honest, how often is it that you say busy when people ask you? Are you feeling peaceful and joyful most days? And when you get really deeply honest with yourself, when you check in with what you know to be true, what is most important to you? What is of most worth? Does your life reflect that? My friends, I love you. Amen, and blessed be.